All right, guys, we've had a few of these episodes. It's The Hobby with Cage, our National Treasures series. And if you've been listening to these shows, if you've been watching these shows, I ask people to give out flowers, sort of like a compliment to people. As somebody who was doing things the right way, somebody who they saw doing something that maybe they hadn't seen before, somebody they wanted to, you know, give a compliment to. And if you've been watching, one of the names that gets mentioned often and who they give flowers to is our guest today, none other than Jeff Wilson. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Cage. I really appreciate that. I'm honored and humbled by that, and I really appreciate that. But second of all, I wanted to congratulate you, Cage, on officially reaching hobby influencer status.
Oh, yeah. Hey, now.
For those watching on YouTube, you are wearing a black T-shirt.
There you go. I wore this for you.
I feel like that has automatically qualified you now for influencer status. So there you go. Welcome to the club, Cage.
So for Nat's episode, I wore a PSA shirt. I'm trying to think of who else I did that with. I don't remember, but for somebody's, I wore a Backyard Break shirt. It didn't really work. I didn't have Backyard Breaks on, but I busted it out because you come back from National, you get like a whole new wardrobe, but I've run out. So it's just black. I want to say it's a nod to Steve Jobs, but I think he might have copied you.
I will say it is. I've gotten into the black T-shirt thing. I didn't used to wear that. It is certainly just simpler in the morning to know what you're going to put on. It is kind of nice, right?
I mean, so my kids left for camp decked out in all gold today. They have sort of like a Color Wars Olympiad. My wife, of course, put on a gold shirt. I don't have anything gold, so I just went with black. You know, it was like, I just won't have any color at all. It's
it looks good on you. So
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But listen, we're talking about National Treasures. We're talking, you know, I named this episode not because Panini pays me anything. I sponsor these episodes myself. So
Panini doesn't pay me anything either. I don't get free boxes.
But do you call anything National Treasures?
List, I'm not on their list.
You know what? Let's pivot into that because I mean, you know, why not? I tell you in the prep, hey, these are the questions we're going to ask. But I'll ask you questions. What do you actually think about that? You know, people who, let's get right into the meat. 2 minutes in, normally I'm still doing my intro. You think they're loaded boxes?
You want me to put Panini on blast?
Anyone. Do you think there's loaded boxes? It could be Tops. It could be Panini. Oh, it could be Leaf. It could be Upper Deck. No, don't blast anyone.
But we won't go.
You're keeping it fluffy.
Do I think there's loaded boxes? I don't think so. No, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy. And I've been told repeatedly by leadership at Tops and Fanatics that is absolutely 100% not the case. And of course, they own that printing facility and they've talked extensively about the security measures and the randomization of the machines that are inserting things into the packs and the whole thing. So they're very adamant about it. I'm going to take their word on it. Yep. I know that there's a lot of conspiracy theory about it.
Well,
I don't know.
Think about that, right?
I'm going to believe them until I'm proven otherwise.
Think about this answer. So there's a lot of conspiracy theory out there, a lot of rumor mill out there saying there's loaded boxes. I don't know how many of them have spoken to someone at Tops or Panini and asked them that question, whereas you have.
I very directly talked to them about it, and they have very directly said absolutely not. So, you know, I mean, that's a lot to risk. Like, that's a lot to... I don't know. That's a lot to risk to like be doing that and have the chance of that just getting completely exposed and turning into this massive scandal that the manufacturer is behind. They got too much to lose. Like, yep. I can't imagine, you know, Fanatics putting their billions of dollars of investment at risk by way of like trying to slip a particular breaker or a particular influencer, a loaded box, just so it could be a cool marketing moment for 30 seconds. Like, I don't see them doing that. I will also mention this at the Tops conference that I went to, I met a guy who was high up in the FBI who was just hired by Fanatics and Tops specifically for integrity monitoring. And one of his duties was to monitor and ensure the fair distribution of product and that none of it was tampered with and that nobody was getting preferential, you know, loaded boxes or anything of that sort. They literally hired an FBI agent, a senior FBI agent, to head that up. So I don't think they're messing around.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it sounds right. You know what I mean? It sounds right. Especially a company like Fanatics that has regulations on it because they have a gambling wing, you know? I mean, so you can't be messing around with that kind of stuff. And I think that, you know, the most poignant thing you said is, you know, just the valuation of Fanatics. Sure. Would it be great if it just so happened that Griezmann pulls a one-of-one Jackie Robinson cut? Sure. But the press of that, the slight, you know, extra views that are going to be seen, it's not worth risking the entire operation and the billions of dollars. So I'm with you on that one. I'm going to swing it back to National Treasures. I'm going to swing it back to that. I don't know if those boxes are loaded. I have no idea. I've never really opened them because they're too rich for my blood. But I know you, sir, are a National Treasure. I will start with giving you some flowers, and then I'm going to ask you the same question of who did you see doing something the right way? You know, who would you give a compliment or flowers to? Your booth. I tried to stop by and say hello. I did get a hi from you, but you were like recording. You look like the Pied Piper. There were just kids and just massive amount of people all over the place. And what I'll say is this. You know, the National was crazy. And the first day I walked around and I talked to a lot of people and nobody was happy about their location. Nobody was, not a single person. Most people were hot. By like the second day, the end of the everybody was happy at the show because they were all killing it. Like they were all doing well. But one person I spoke to in the beginning who didn't really have anything negative to say at all was Black Jada Wolf, Sharon, who I do a show with and she's been on. She was on National Treasures also. And even though it was so big, one of the things that I think she liked was that her booth was right near where you were set up. It was like a landmark. It was one of these milestone setups. And, you know, it was like, okay, she's catty-cornered away from the sports card investors booth, the kid trading area. I have to say, one, packed, just packed house. So I'm sure there was some overflow to the people around, so they'll give you flowers. But I've been to a lot of shows. I've been to shows that have trade nights after. I've been to shows that try to, you know, cater to kids' trade nights. And most people don't really know how to do it. You know what I mean? Like I've been to, you know, shows that have been around for 20, 30 years. And they say, oh, we're going to have a trade night for kids. But it's just, okay, here's some tables. You know, we're going to let you in. There's no structure to it. There's no nothing. And look, it may have been done before. I don't know if I got to give you credit for inventing this. But what you had there was structured. It was a space where everybody knew where to go, where the kids could come and make deals with one another. And you had space set up for them. I tried to walk through it at one point. It was like, I couldn't really make it. Like, it was like kids were on the floor. Kids were like camped out. They were making deals, making trades. That is something I think, you know, the flowers go to you because I think people have to learn from this. I think whatever shows go forward, there's got to maybe be a dedicated space for this, right? Maybe partner with, you know, Card Kids and set up a spot because everybody else I've had on here, whether, you know, Nat Turner or Brian Dwyer from REA, they all acknowledge the kids might not be buying 52 Mantles or PMGs now, right? But you want them to stay, and at some point they will be. Like if they're not your customer now, some of them will be down the road. You got to take care of them now. And it seemed like you were taking care of them at the National. So that's long flowers.
I appreciate that, Cage. Thank you.
There you go.
I was thrilled with how that turned out. And there are a lot of other people in the hobby that do great things for kids. There's a lot of card shops that do great things for kids. Ryan Card Collector 2's always done a great job of having kids trade nights at his store in Ohio. Mama Break Stephanie. She's done kid stuff. She had a kid's trade room at the last Burbank show. And we're actually going to be doing our Card Kids Trade Zone at this Burbank show coming up on Labor Day. And Stephanie's also going to be doing a kid's trade thing there as well with Mama Break. So there's been people doing it, but I, you know, my personal experience and like the what led me into it was last year at the National, I brought my older son Reeves and he was going around the show floor trading and I was just kind of watching him and noticing that it was like difficult for him to find other kids. And then when he ran into another kid, they didn't have anywhere to go to trade because no dealer wants you to put your case down on their table and then trade with another person. They want your business. So he was having to go like into the next to a food stand, sit against the wall in the corner to do a trade deal with another kid. And I'm like, this doesn't feel right. Then on top of that, unfortunately at the National last year, there was a guy who was going around doing trade deals with kids specifically to take advantage of them. He was doing bad trade deals with kids. I know about this because he tried to do a bad trade deal with my son where my son's best card was worth about $1,000 at that time. And this guy offered him essentially $4 worth of cards in trade and told my son that this was some super rare, one of one.
I remember this deal. There was content. He was offering a PSA 10 Michael Jordan rookie card, and your son had a bunch of Will Greers.
Exactly. might have been reversed. Might have been reversed. But you know, anyway, so then so Reeves got me and said, "Dad, this is really weird. Can you check this out?" And then I saw what the guy was doing and had it out with him.
It's twofold, right? It's a place and it's some safety and some monitoring. I mean, I've been with my son at shows and it's like, no dealers want you near there. Every empty table that there used to be at shows where they get set up is now booked up by people paying for that table. And deals get made like, you know, you're in a hotel show, you got to go outside and the kids are on the floor by the bathroom or by the hotel kitchen area. And you know, they're trying to make deals and then adults come over and they try to make deals and you got to watch that. So 100% twofold. So what, you just brainstormed and said, we need a place and we need some oversight?
I said, look, if the National's not going to do this, then we got to do it. And it's like, we got to do it. Like, there's got to be a place for kids. I think getting kids into sports cards is the most important thing for the long term of the hobby. But it's also beyond that. Like, to me, being in sports cards as a kid was so impactful on my life and my development of going on and becoming an entrepreneur and starting a bunch of different businesses. Because when I think back in my whole life to like, what was my first entrepreneurial experience? It was buying and selling and trading cards and going to card shows when I was in fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. That was it. That's how I cut my teeth on like negotiating. And so I think it's so healthy for kids to be into cards and to do trading like that, like to think about comps and to think about prices and to think about fair values and to think about, you know, which cards might go up in the future, which ones are, you know, may not be as valuable. And to, I think the mental exercise, the just simply the public speaking, the negotiation of like having to interact with others and make deals. I just think the kids who came to our trade zone and did that for 3 or 4 days. And then hopefully they're doing that, you know, same thing at other, you know, shows and with their friends. I think those kids are going to be so much better prepared when they get into the business world, you know, because they had some of those experiences as a kid. And so I think anything we can do to perpetuate that, it's just a great thing. I mean, frankly, for the future of the whole country, like it's actually truly a great thing.
I got to like hum the national anthem as you're going. It's pretty, so what's funny. I love the idea, right? And I'll let you give flowers in a second. I'm giving you flowers and I'll let you get to the, I mean, we're 12 minutes in and I don't even get to the first question for you to answer yet, but I have to pivot from this, right? Because what you're saying makes all the sense in the world, right? It's kids. It's the future of the hobby. It's good. It's good lessons for kids to learn. I think everybody would admit the kids are the future. I mean, hell, Whitney Houston said it best, right? I mean, and they're the future of the hobby. Every business out there wants to court kids. Everybody wants to provide a safe place for kids to make trades, kids to trade with each other, kids to have fun. It sounds so obvious, right? And yet you had to take it on your shoulders and do it yourself. I sit back and I said, you know what? If I didn't know anything about Jeff Wilson, market movers, sports card investment, didn't know anything about you, I would say, wow, this guy is, you know, he's great for the hobby. But I do know who you are, and I have been in the hobby for a long time. I think it's a fair thing to say that you're one of the more polarizing people in the hobby. Do you have any idea?
I think people would say that. I don't like that. I don't intend for that. But I do. I think, you know, there's definitely a lot of people that I think would agree with you.
I mean, I listen for the first 13 minutes and I'm thinking, this is all positive. This is all good. Like I can't say, hey, Jeff, what you're saying here is wrong. Or how would you ever think about doing this? Like, is it an envy thing? Is it that you came up with an idea that people don't have? Is it because you're everywhere? Like, what do you think it is, man?
Look, I got into the hobby back in 2019 and my focus for the first couple of years when the market was hot was to talk about cards from the dollars and cents standpoint. Yep. I talked a lot about flipping cards. You know, what's funny is like people play these video clips, you know, Will Greer never panned out, but people, but they'll play these other video clips of like when I'm talking about Ben Simmons or I'm talking about, you know, who else, James Harden, some of these other, you know, people they'll put on there. There was one the other day where they were like making fun of, I said, buy Teddy Bridgewater cards. But what people forget is, first of all these video clips are from 2019.
Right.
And second of all, Teddy Bridgewater's cards, by the way, actually went up because he actually did exactly what I said in the video, which was he got a chance as a backup quarterback. Then the following year, he got a starting job. I think what it was, he was the backup for New Orleans. Breeze goes out in 2019. He comes in and starts. Then in 2020, he's got a starting job with the Panthers.
Yep.
Now, granted, it's 2023 now, and we look back on that and say, well, where's Teddy Bridgewater today? But if you had bought Teddy Bridgewater cards in 2019 and sold them when the season started in 2020, which, by the way, I did, you did really, really well for yourself.
So it's just that you're omnipresent. It's just that you're everywhere. So there are enough of these takes out there that if anybody is looking for it, they could find something. Because, I gave Ben Simmons as a pick once. I gave Teddy Bridgewater as a pick right before that happened too. So, I mean, you know, in the beginning – When the market was different, Andrew and I on this show used to give picks every play, every episode. We're talking about, you know, hundreds of picks that not all of them are going to work out. But if you bought them and, you know, sold them in 2020, you bought them in 2020 and sold them in 2021, they almost all worked out. So I understand.
So and that's the thing, right? But then you make the point, like this was an era of time. And this era of time was 2019, 2020, and the first 2 months of 2021 when that worked. And then it all started not to work and everything fell backwards and the market slid back and we were in a bubble and, you know, things fell hard in 2021 and 2022. And people who came in at the peak, they never had the experience of flipping for profit and having those types of speculative picks work out. And so, I think that I got a lot of attention and credit when the market was hot and when people were buying Teddy Bridgewater cards and flipping them, you know, for positive cash months later, or in some cases, weeks or days later. But then I also think I've gotten a lot of the blame since the market has come back down and people point at me and, you know, my picks were bad. I lost people money. You know, I caused all the hype and the crash or whatever, you know, all these things that people say. And so, you know, okay. Like I understand, like if I'm going to get credit when it goes up, I'm going to get criticism when it goes down. And okay. So you know what? I can handle that. But we've made very intentional decisions along the way. And by the way, I will say, Cage, I was overly optimistic about the sports card market in 2021. You know, like if I could go back and redo things, what I would redo a couple of things. So one thing I would redo is less optimism in 2021, you know, I would have redone that. And I would have, I also would have put more focus in 2019 and 2020 on, you know, long-term collecting. I would have put more focus on vintage and older cards, but that wasn't the content. The content was all about short-term flips. Like everything we were doing was short-term, you know, short-term more so. And so, but obviously it's the short-term stuff that really died harder in 2021 and 2022. So I wish I did more on collectors. I wish I did more in long-term.
I mean, listen, anybody who's being honest would say if they can go back, they would change a lot of what they did too. I'm sure a lot of people would love to have sold everything they had during the peak of the, you know, the boom here. I'm going to give you one more flower. I'll let you pivot, right? Because just even the answer, right? Sometimes spaces need a bad guy. Sometimes you need a heel. And a lot of times when someone's painted as the bad guy, they turn into it. They go with it. They say, okay, well, if you're going to make me the bad guy, I'm the bad guy. I'm going to light my Michael Jordan cards on fire. You know, I'm just going to go full heel on this one. You didn't, right? And what's funny about it is, you know, people give you crap for you went from investor to collector. Well, that's what the market has done.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, it's a shift that makes sense. And I'll give you one more flower into the bouquet because you very easily could have been like, the hell with all these people. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go full on villain on this stuff. I'm going to do all this stuff. Fanatics loves me. These guys love me. I'm going to break. I'm going to have the kids in my booth because every kid's going to be there and I'm going to have them all breaking. I'm just going to make money off of them. No, you had a safe trade space for kids.
Like, which we paid for, like, you know,
which cost you money.
eBay chipped in as well. We didn't make, obviously, you know, we essentially paid half, eBay paid half. And, you know, thank you eBay for their support there, but no, it cost us money. We didn't make a penny off it. It cost us money, but it's, you know, Cage, look, I love this hobby. Like I think some people label me as like, I'm in it for the money. I'm not a collector. I'm a massive collector. You know, all these cards over my shoulder, well, not all of them, but some of them, like those are Tim Tebow cards.
Yeah, you're not buying Tim Tebow. I was just going to say, you're not buying Tim Tebow to make money.
I have spent tens of thousands of dollars on Tim Tebow cards. I cannot imagine what is probably a worse investment than spending tens of thousands of dollars on Tim Tebow cards. But I love it. I collect Tim Tebow. I collect all the former Florida Gators. Like, there's a lot of cards that I buy for my personal collection, which I love. I don't showcase it that much because people aren't interested in it. Like, I've done occasional posts with Tim Tebow cards and whatever, but it doesn't resonate with 98% of the audience. Like, we don't care about this guy anymore. He's not.
When you post it, you got to know what's coming, which is the tough part, right? It's like, oh, now he's showing his cards off. Look at this pivot.
You know.
So, I mean.
I love collecting. I love the hobby. My first job ever as a kid was at a sports card store. I was thrilled when I got that job. I've always loved this. And I want the hobby to grow and I want the hobby to succeed. It's the best for everybody. All these wonderful business owners that I meet, all the card shop owners, all the people who work at all the different, you know, businesses in the hobby, but particularly the card shop owners, because a lot of them have been in it for a long time. They're small business owners. They've got a lot of their personal, you know, wealth and time and energy and passion tied up into a shop. I want nothing more than for those people to be ultra successful. And the way that they're going to be successful is for this hobby to continue to grow and thrive. So we made a very intentional shift in 2021. And it was pretty soon in 2021. Like, you know, when we started to see things go down, like we started to have meetings probably early summer 2021, maybe about 3 months of the market going down in a row. And we started to have meetings about we may need to completely pivot our content. And we started to pivot our content and we ended our show that year. That was like, we didn't do any more picks, no more picks, no more buy, sell, trade. In fact, we stopped a lot of our picks back in 2020, but we stopped doing anything about picks. We created a new video series to showcase the greatest collectors of all time called Slabs that we put a ton of effort into. There's a ton of expense in going out and filming these people's collections. It's not a moneymaker at all for us, but it's a beautiful showcase of great collectors and their collections. And we've done a lot more like collector centric, you know, stuff and kid centric stuff. And we did it all very intentionally. So if people want to say, you know, you shifted and you're riding the trend to, you know what? Yes, we did shift. We shift for the betterment of the hobby, because what was working to grow the hobby back in 2019 and in 2020 was talking about flipping and dollars and cents. And then what, the hobby needs
change
in 2021 and 2022 and now 2023 is to talk about collecting and to talk about.
I used to be able to buy 2012 Prism base cards for $1 and grade them for $6.
Yeah.
You know, and now, I mean, for a time there, you couldn't buy them for less than $20 and you couldn't grade them for $50. Yep. And now no one wants them anymore. Things change. That's just Things the way, change. You know, markets change, the hobby changes. So, go ahead. It's your turn. You could be the florist. Who are you giving flowers out to for the National? Who'd you see doing things the right way?
I'm going to give flowers to the moms who brought their kids to the show. And I got to meet and talk to several of these moms. And this was the experience. So their kids, their sons, these were moms with sons. The dads weren't there. I don't know why the dads weren't there. Busy with work, or maybe it's a single mom in some cases. I don't know why. But the sons so badly wanted to come to the National, experience cards, you know, trade with other kids, all that kind of stuff. So they begged their mom, you know, all year long. And I heard this story from a whole bunch of moms all year long. Please take me to the National. All I want for Christmas, all I want for my birthday is to go to the National. And the mom begrudgingly, not knowing what she was getting into, said, okay, I'll take you to the National. She books the hotel rooms. She brings the kid to the show floor. And then she realizes like, oh, wow, this is crazy. I kind of got to stay here. And yet I don't understand any of this. I'm not really that interested in it, but my kid wants to run wild and never leave. And so some of those moms would perch up like along the edges of our kids' trade zone while their kids were in there for hours and hours. And these moms are reading books. They're checking their phone. They're talking to one another. And so I had great fun just like, you know, talking to these moms and, you know, how did your kid get into this? And, you know, did you know what this was going to be like? And then just thanking them. I thanked every single one of these moms I saw, because I'm like, that's a commitment. Like, if you don't know any of this, you don't like any of this, and you're bringing your son to this and spending all this money and all this time. So my flowers go to the moms who did that.
I love it. I mean, that It's funny because I watch this, I listen, and I hear you say, oh, these kids just, it's their birthday present. It's what they want for Christmas. And mom brought them. It wasn't a mom and son. It was a father and son. But, you know, for people who listen and say, this really happens. Yes. When I was in Vegas, I was out. Yes. I went to In-N-Out Burger. I'm sorry, guys. But I went out, I had lunch. I was with one other person. We were sitting next to a father and son who also had the same idea to escape from Mint for a second. And, you know, I gave him a card. Like, you know, here it was a PSA 9 of like a Mookie Betts or something like that. I'm like, here you go. You know, and he's like, wow, that's amazing. There's so many nice people. You know, the show's been great. This is what he wanted for Christmas. So I took him here. You know, we saved up. I took him here. And I'm like, well, have you done everything and seen everything you wanted to see? It was the second day. And he's like, as long as we get to see Jeff Wilson, we've checked everything off the list. That I'm not lying. I'm not lying. This is the kid said this. He's probably 12 or 13 years old. And so, I mean, the fact that people are seeking you out and now you're going to have this kind of, you know, protected kids area for kids to go trade. I think that's a great thing. Okay. So a pivot, because now you're Jeff the collector, your sports card collector. I hope you've trademarked that also instead of sports card investor. If you haven't, run and do it now before I publish this. So what kind of pickups, what kind of deals, what kind of trades, either you, your kids, you know, tell me something that happened at the National that was fun, a card that you left with that you didn't go there with.
Yeah, I had great fun shopping around the National. Some of it, of course, was caught on video on our Sports Card Investor YouTube. So, you know, some people have probably seen some of the journey. But, you know, one thing that I absolutely love about the National every year is you find items, not necessarily sports cards, but you find items that just captivate you. And you're like, wow, I kind of have to have that, yeah. Even though I never went into
the National. You didn't know it existed sometimes.
And so for me, that item was there was a guy who had Michael Jordan's early Sports Illustrated magazine signed by Michael Jordan. He had Michael Jordan's first ever Sports Illustrated cover, which was when he was on North Carolina. It was him and Sam Perkins. First time he ever appeared on the cover of Sports Illustrated, signed by Michael Jordan, BGS, encased authentic auto. And then his second cover ever was the 1984 Olympics, when Jordan, played on that Olympics team, led the U.S. to a gold medal in 84 as an amateur, because back then it was only, you know, amateur participation. And so I bought those two from him, and it's not anything I was expecting to pick up, but it was like, I was just like, these are so cool.
That's
like
cool stuff.
First two Sports Illustrated signed by Jordan. I just thought that those were so cool. I picked up a lot of stuff. I picked up, you know, everything from vintage, a 1941 play ball, Joe DiMaggio card signed by Joe DiMaggio, one of only eight ever to be PSA authenticated with Joe DiMaggio's signature, all the way on up to a Desmond Ridder, you know, my Atlanta Falcons quarterback, black no huddle prism, one of one card. So I like the whole gamut of, you know, Joe DiMaggio to Desmond Ridder and everything in between. So I had fun. I picked up just a lot of different things like that. And I just love the variety of unusual stuff you see there.
So you've been to a few Nationals. How'd this one compare?
I mean, it was my favorite by far. And I really loved the last ones as well. Obviously for me personally, you know, the kids trade zone was just a total highlight and just made it unbelievably memorable. Also, both of my sons came to this one. So to get to experience the National with them was really fun. My older son brought four of his buddies. So, you know, we had a whole gaggle. And so that was like really cool to like, a couple of the nights I was able to sneak away and take them to trade nights. No camera, no filming, nothing, like trying to be completely low key and just hang out with my kids and take them to trade night. And one night we went to the soccer trade night, which was at, the Marriott, because my younger son's big into soccer cards. And then the second night we went to the Hyatt. They had a big trade night, just kind of all over the lobby of the Hyatt went there for a while. And so, you know, those moments were a ton of fun for me. So I mean, this one's definitely my favorite for all those reasons. Chicago's also a great place to do it. I actually heard in your last interview with a basketball card guy that, you had never been to Gibson's before. Yeah. So this National, I went to Gibson's twice for dinner. I was invited to a dinner there one night and I loved it. And so I'm a steakhouse aficionado. Okay. So I love steakhouses. I've eaten at many of the best ones all over the country. I was excited about getting to go to Gibson's because it's an old Chicago one. The one out in Rosemont's newer, but I guess the old one is downtown. And so I was excited when I got to go there the first night. And I got to tell you, it was a fantastic meal. Like, that steak was on up there with some of the better steaks I've ever had in my life. And so I was excited. So then I took my whole team Sunday night. So once we had like finished shutting down the booth and packing everything up, I took them all over there like 9:30 PM Sunday night, we roll in. It was just a great way to end the trip. So you got to find yourself back at Gibson's 2 years from now in Chicago.
I did make it into Gibson's this time, but it was 11 something and they had already closed the bar, let alone the restaurant. So I did step foot in there. Because, you know, you never know. Someone might have a picture of me walking into Gibson's for a second. Be like, he's a liar. He's there. You never know. Today's day. So I was there. I did leave immediately following. There was a guy at the bar with a huge, like, I don't know, ice cream sundae kind of thing that he had ordered. Yep. I was like, can I get one of those? And they're like, no, the kitchen just closed a couple minutes ago. I was like, I would eat that. That would look awesome. It was a huge, like, ice cream tower or something. It was pretty nuts. But yeah, I'll make it there one day. I mean, Chicago, it's every other year. So, you know, we won't be back next year with the year after Cleveland. So, I mean, this
I've never been to Cleveland before. I don't know what that was going to be like. Yeah, but I know the Nationals been there a handful of times before, and people say that it's a good convention center and a good setup. So, I guess not quite as walkable as Chicago, but it's still, you know, it's still apparently a good setup. So,
I'll lay it up for you because I've asked this to a bunch of people, but I think it's a little unique one here because of what you did at the National here. Normally, I would ask somebody, hey, what's something you'd like to take from Chicago and bring it to Cleveland, something you saw that was done well. I guess the way I'll ask it to you is, you know, if the National was open to it, would you work with them to do the kids trade zone that you did there, you know, in connection with the National? That's something you would like to do for Cleveland?
I would 100% love to do that, but I would have a requirement, which I don't know that they would go for.
Ooh.
And my requirement is that it would have to be on the show floor. And what I've seen with other card shows that sometimes do kids trade areas, they don't want to give up show floor space because that's the space they can sell to dealers and corporates, and they've got a lot of demand. So mm-hmm. what they want to do with stuff like that is they want to put it in a room upstairs. You know, they want to, we're going to take a room upstairs and put it there. And it doesn't work nearly as good because kids don't want to, they don't want to leave the show floor and go somewhere totally separate away from the show. They want to have the energy and excitement of the show floor, and they want to be able to trade a card with a kid and then be able to walk to a dealer booth and maybe flip it to a dealer 2 minutes later.
Yep. Seen that happen.
And so I would welcome the conversation with the National, and I'm fairly certain the National would say, we would love to do this. We're going to put it upstairs in, you know, the one of those. And it would be an immediate non-starter. And I would say, I would rather pay for it and have it inside our booth because I think that that's where the kids are going to want to be. And that's going to make it 100 times more utilized by kids, which is the goal.
I think you'd be surprised. I think, you know, there's enough corporate space. I think, you know, this new crew with the National, they figure out a way to, you know, I mean, look, eBay paid for half of it. I'm sure you could find, you know, other companies, even smaller ones. Hell, I'd contribute something to it because it really was a cool thing to see. Jeff, I promise to have you out of here quick. You know, I'll give you the final word on this, my National Treasures thing. You want to give a little, you mentioned that you took them to Gibson's, which is enough because I've never been there, but your crew, I mean, how many people did you bring? You want to give them a shout, kind of like a thank you. You know, I'm sure that, you know, you brought a whole bunch of people with you. And, you know, the staff is often what makes, you know, this stuff run. I mean, we wouldn't be talking here if it wasn't for my staff, which is me sending out invites and, you know, setting up the StreamYard. But you have a massive staff. So how many people did you bring? And let's chat about that and we'll take it home.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm trying to total up in my head. I think we brought about 15 people total. Ooh. It's a real operation because we have a few different goals there. We've got one is content. And so we've got a whole group capturing content, the videographers, the editors, and we do something really unique during National Week that nobody else used to do. Although this year I saw some people doing it and a great for them that they're doing it. We film content and then release it the following morning at 9 a.m. so that you're getting like a real-time look into what happened at the National the day before. But because our videos are fully produced, they're like, you know, high quality, you know, cinematography style videos and editing, that is a massive lift to film on like a Thursday night up until show close at 8 p.m. and then to release it at 9 a.m. the next morning. So what we do is we literally put our people on 24-hour shifts during the national. We have people, our video team, 24 hours a day, somebody is awake doing editing. And wow. So we got our camera guys go out, they run the footage back to the editor. The editor works all night long, overnight. Then, you know, we have someone else wake up to proof everything at like 7 a.m. And it's this whole process. And so they work tirelessly. The national is really the only time of the year we go that crazy, but it's really worth it. And then the we have our, you know, our product team. So market movers, primarily the sports card investor app, et cetera. So they set up and they, you know, advertise market movers and everything we're doing with that. Then we obviously had the Card Kids Trade Zone this year. So then we had staff there to help with the Card Kids Trade Zone. And then we took part of our booth for stand-up displays, and we took part of our booth for Slab Strong, which are, you know, two companies that I invested in, and Dan from stand-up displays, you know, and Tim from Slab Strong, great entrepreneurs, great business partners. And so they were in the booth too. So yeah, it was a whole thing. And yeah, that type of thing just takes a ton of time and effort and preparation and setup and breakdown. And my team did 99% of it. Like it was not me. I just got to show up and, you know, be the guy on camera. And my team was there, you know, laboring the entire thing. And it just, yeah, I'm unbelievably thankful for them. They do a fantastic job. They make me look good, a lot better than I should look.
It's the black t-shirt.
Exactly, the team and the black t-shirt. Unbelievably thankful. Kelly is the leader of our content team. Teapot is the leader of our product team. Charles is the head of production. The three of them busted ass, but did so many people on our team busted ass, to set the whole thing up. Zach and Nick and so many others who worked in the booth. Caitlin from our team was instrumental in the setup of the whole thing. Just so many different people, and it was awesome.
Listen, I'm just happy that nobody kidnapped you this time, because, you know, I don't know what you did to the hobby to deserve it. I don't know. April Fool's joke, everybody. You guys remember it. You can find him at It's Jeff Wilson. You can find him Market Movers. You can find Sports Card Investor. Obviously, you guys, you know him because you're probably here because of him and not me. Jeff, thanks for coming. You are a national treasure.
It's been fun, Cage. I appreciate you doing this series. It's been great. I've enjoyed listening to the other interviews, and I'm going to continue to listen.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.